que tú me toques con la tua rabia. Voglio che tu mi tocchi con il tuo furore.
Hear us here in Host of the Hour, first to follow the fox named Neve, with books laid before the bear named M, to read and retire around the long fire.
Do you hear that?
It's just the two of us.
I know, it's so quiet. No yeah. one's barging in to say fuck books, stepping on my bit. I don't have to like wait, go to the end of the episode to figure out how to line Autumn up because they can't not interrupt me when I'm saying hello.
Yeah.
It's a whole new era. It's a whole new world we live in. It's a whole new place with a brand new attitude, but you still got to catch them all and be the best you can be.
That's so true. In this case, you're the one who's laying the books before me.
That's true this time.
Yeah. Well, I never really
considered the idea that like you were submitting the books because like that is true when we're doing Icelandic sagas, but that's not true overall.
Yeah, that's what the poem was originally implying. Yeah. Because it was the Icelandic sagas. It's just continued past, you know, the specificity. I mean, there's been plenty of times it's not been books and stuff, but
that's true. When the like books laid before line to me is like very like, do you ever watch Are You Afraid of the Dark? It's very like submitted to the Midnight Society kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Not to date myself as an elder millennial in the extreme at this, yeah. But
I remember Are You Afraid of the Dark being a little more actually scary as a kid than like Goosebumps stuff.
Yes, that's true.
But it was still a little bit in the camp.
Yes. Yeah. I remember going, most of them I was like, this is kind of hokey. And then there was the clown, and I was deathly afraid of clowns as a child because I watched it at an impressionable age.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if there's a specific episode that really got to me. I remember there was a ghost on where it was like a boy who was just cold in the woods and they like gave him a sweater.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
That's very...
Was there ever an alien Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Ooh, I kind of doubt it.
Yeah, I feel like it wasn't the vibe. Yeah, aliens always scared the shit out of me.
I know that's like one of your things. It's kind of weird because I don't get it at all.
Yeah.
I subscribe to the Close Encounters ethos of, if there's aliens, please come get me. I'm saying goodbye to everyone. Sorry, it was nice knowing you, but I want to go to fucking space.
Truly, and like, they don't get to me in quite the same way, other than like, you know, Nope. Still, yeah. Like, hit a little bit more than
Nope
think.
Nope was really freaky. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's freaky in general, but it being an alien thing just, like, extra unsettled me, I think. Mm-hmm. Compared to most horror stuff. Signs scared me until they showed the aliens at the end.
Yeah, that's fair.
And got, like, extremely Jesus-y with it. And then I was like, yeah. Oh, okay. This is no longer scary.
I'm due for, like, a Shyamalan entire filmography we rewatched at some point. Not that I've watched all of them. I watched, like, all the big ones, and then I fell off at The Village. I was like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever seen at the time. And then I didn't watch anything until Trap. But I'm like, Trap was really good, and people like some of his more recent work. I'm like, I should go back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been, like, it would be fun to rewatch Signs in particular, because... I know, there's just a way that one stuck with me. I think in part just because of the aliens thing. Also because whenever I think about it, I'm like, it did just get, like, really Jesus-y.
Yeah.
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 Which I know kind of happens with some of his movies, but...
The biggest work ever created to affirm people who have too many drinks left on their desk, have finished.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. I do think that, like, when I try and think about childhood me, what was it that it, like, unsettled me so much with aliens? And it was specifically the, like, something being, you know, highly intelligent, but also, like, having no way to communicate at all. Because it never bothered me in, like, Star Trek or Star Wars, because those are just, like, a normal part of society. They're just people, right?
Yeah.
They're, like, even if you don't speak, whatever the Wookiee is, it Wookiees? I used to know this.
Yeah, you mean like Chewbacca?
Yeah, even if you don't speak the Wookiee language, which I don't.
I don't know what I don't know what Wookiees speak. Sorry, I don't know. Wookiee? I have no idea.
Wookiee speak?
Okay,
Or Shiri Wook.
I fucking hate Star Wars.
Anyway, even though I don't know what Chewbacca is saying, Han Solo knows what Chewbacca is saying, right? Like, that, as a child, it was just, Chewbacca is just a person, right?
Yeah.
It's just a person speaking a different language. That's, like, that's totally normal. I'm in no way afraid of that, right? But it was, like, the weird unknown of, like, grays and shit. Mm-hmm. Just always insane, especially if they're, like, abducting people who just do weird, like, can't understand what they're trying to do, experiments and stuff.
Yeah.
So I always had to leave when we were watching X-Files, and it was the alien episodes. Mm. And then as an adult, I watched through all of X-Files, including the alien episodes, and realized that they were, like, the stupidest fucking episodes that weren't scary. And, like, for a whole bunch of it, it's not even aliens until it's revealed to be aliens again, but in a, like, really stupid, funny way. Because for a long time, it commits to, oh, aliens are the one actual hoax that's, like, the government's perpetrating or whatever. But then, like, actual aliens come. But then the government gets confused or something. It's been a while since I watched it, but it's
I only watched season of X-Files and did not stick with it.
Yeah. Anyway. Vida Nuova. Should we get into that?
So, we're starting season 5. Hi, welcome. This is Around the Long Fire, where we talk about Icelandic sagas. Clearly, obviously. How would you even question such a thing? Go back to the other seasons if you'd like to hear some Icelandic sagas. We're not doing that this season. This season's a bunch of different books. The first one is Vida Nuova. We are reading the Joseph Lutzi translation. It's relatively recent. La Vida Nuova is a famous text by Dante Alighieri that came out in 1294. I was not alive back then.
I actually was.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Considering you're younger than me by a little bit.
Well.
I don't know how that works.
I look younger than you.
Oh, okay. I see how it is.
I'm doing a vampire thing.
Yeah, no, I know. So yeah, we'll just do this. We'll reread the introduction and then the first eight chapters, parts. I don't really know what you want to call them. We'll get into it. And then maybe I'll talk a little bit about background, because like this is a book I've read before. The background on this is a little cringe and a little funny. And so it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Should we summarize this? I am like, what do you do with Vita Nova?
I mean, the introduction is just, it's mostly like the translator's approach.
So Joseph Luzzi goes on at length about trying to like modernize Dante's style. Because Vita Nova is like essays about, it's like a narrative in like essay form. They're just like nonfiction. It's about his life. He encounters this woman named Beatrice. The story is of him from 9 years old, where he met this woman and like instantly fell for her and went crazy. And she's like his muse, and the interactions he had with her, because like they're both betrothed to different people, Italian society. Even calling it Italian society is a little complicated, because it's Italy didn't exist yet for hundreds of years. But society was all about arranged marriages, and he was already betrothed to someone and she was betrothed to someone, whatever. But you know, he just went with it and let it infuse his art. But then he intersperses with sonnets, little descriptions of the sonnets, stuff like that. So Luzzi's introduction is mostly about the ways in which this book, in some ways, is like a reshaping of what literature was for. Because Dante was part of a poetic group that was mostly writing, you know, sonnets for each other, just a bunch of like learned guys of means. Means could be limited, but of means, upper class sort of stuff, people who are educated. And then Dante in particular decided not only to write his sonnets towards a female audience instead of like his love sonnets instead of just passing around among their sausage fest friends, but then to make the whole book as a feature for people, normal people, to read. And so part of it is like an explanation of the work, so people who are maybe not as versed in poetry understand what's going on with the allusions and stuff after the fact, obviously. Because it was published in 94, but it looks like the most of the, like some of the texts go back as like early as 1283. So like 10, like 11 years before. So it was being worked for a while. Luzzi's tenor, the reason I picked this, I read like three or four, I read about the first half of like three or I think four different translations of Vita Nova to decide on this one. And it has the Alf ethos to me, which is trying to modernize it like inherently to be accessible to the modern reader. I feel like that's really been our vibe with the stuff we've looked for. Luzzi himself feels like a stuffy prick, I'm gonna be honest. He has a vibe that I just find very off-putting, but I think the book part is like the work he did is really good. And so I was like, this guy, but like whatever, I don't know him, whatever, maybe he's fine, but it's just the vibe of the introduction. Because he's like, oh, certainly there's been no good translations of this into English since the one in like the 1920s or some shit. I'm like, roll my eyes immediately. But he's like, I can't use that. It's too archaic. Ridiculous man. So that is like mostly introduction. I don't know if you have any thoughts about this beyond what I presented.
No, I mean, I was just thinking, I was recently explaining to somebody the new translation of Beowulf that we read.
Yes.
And I was like, There's this way in which, like, you hear, this is not quite to the level of, like, colloquial that Beowulf goes to. But I was like, there's a way in which you hear that, like, oh, like, it's gonna, like, reference hashtags or whatever, and you kind of roll your eyes. But when Beowulf was written, it was, like, cobbled together from old poems and then stuff that was, like, very contemporary, just speaking to people. And the fact that it goes so contemporary with it means that it can like run that gamut to sometimes it feels really old, when it needs to feel old, because it would have to the original audience. And this is not, I mean, a lot of this is more of the same time, right? But it does have a little bit of like, you know, he was writing to like people of his time. There's a way in which like trying to adhere to the old language does just end up making stuff kind of stuffy and archaic, in a way that's like, this isn't actually how like anyone at the time would have received it, you know? So, I do appreciate this translation, having read, I think, a far stuffier translation in high school.
It definitely does not have that vibe. The bare minimum of, you'd think the bare minimum of the Latin phrases are in English. I appreciate. I didn't take Latin.
Yeah. I did, and I still appreciate it. I don't want to fucking translate fucking Latin. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know if you just want to get into it then.
Sure. We didn't read too much.
No, so we only read the first eight parts. It is an introduction to he meeting Beatrice on the ninth year of the ninth month, the ninth day or whatever. There's a bit in the introduction that I found delightful. If people have listened to, I feel like it's mostly come up on Ghost Divers, but a little bit on Pooton, know that every once in a while you have a predilection towards numerology.
Uh-huh.
Specifically when you talk about Nana and like 707 and the girl's name Nana, you know, blah, 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 yeah. You know, the things that Nana are about.
To be clear, I think that like Yazawa Ai in Nana is intentionally doing some numerology stuff, right? That's like separate from this kind of just like, oh, I'm finding like correlations between dates and everything of just like in the real world. But I did, when I noticed how much it would keep showing you the room numbers of like all of the apartments and stuff that they're in, decide to just really lean into the numerology for that to like have a bit of fun. But I do think whenever 7 comes up, and also to like to a lesser extent 8, in Nana, it is like intentional that she's bringing up that number.
Yeah. But there is a bit in the introduction where he talks about the way the book begins and ends on Dante falling back on very classical, like Renaissance era numerology, in which 9 is like a, you know, a number that represents the Trinity in its own way, like, you know, replicated upon itself is like a divine number sort of stuff. He goes, the reader wants to shout, no, Dante, no numerology, not now. And I laughed because I sent that to you months ago when I was first reading this. And I was like, this reminds me of you. And then you sent it to me literally like yesterday or 2 days ago being like, oh, this is what I talk about Nana. And did not remember I had sent it to you.
Yeah. This has been long enough. We watch fucking all of Berlin Alexander plots in between.
Yes. Yeah. So he meets Beatrice, falls immediately in love with her, decides that he's going to write all these things about her. She's going to be his muse, whatever, project, like writes a couple sonnets, immediately, like, there's a whole bit where he sees her at a party and he has to go into a side room just to like fall into size. And I just think of the Scott Pilgrim line where he's like, Ramona Flowers asks him about his life and he's like, it's a long story full of sighs. That's what Vita Nova is to me. Is Scott Pilgrim waffling about girls he likes? So he is so clearly besotted by this woman that everyone notices. But the minute that he gives the game away, he's in a room with like multiple women and everyone thinks that it's like a woman in front of Beatrice, who he won't name. She's unnamed in the story. But immediately like, just like, oh, that's who Dante has a crush on. And he's like, well, I don't want them to be like tawdry with the actual woman of my affection. So I'm just going to roll with it. I'm just going to let everyone think that she's the one that I'm in love with. That's my screen woman. That's what he calls her. And I'm going to just like put all of my affection. I'm going to write poems to her and everyone will think that I'm crazy about her. And then I'll write other allusions to like greater, broader love in a bigger sense. And those are actually to Beatrice. And now I'm telling you, the reader, but at the time, no one had a fucking clue. I even made a list of all the most beautiful women in Florence. Was it Florence? I think it's Florence. Beatrice was 9th. Oh, amazing. 9 again. And I put her name in there, but I put the woman that everyone thinks I was in love with in there. And, you know, everyone just kind of bought it. Very silly thing to do.
Yeah. There's also a vibe to this of like, maybe this is all true, but it could also just be Dante being like, cause he's like talks about how much he had to commit to the bit when she died as well. And like grieving or whatever. Yeah. And it's like, I was reading a little bit being like, Dante, you can't just admit that you had a crush on 2 different women. Like you can do that. That's fine. It's fine. Like if this is all true, like that's cool too. But like, if you just had a crush on this other woman as well as Beatrice, I'm not judging you for that. I still think that your love for Beatrice could be like some exceptional thing or whatever. If that's like what you're really committed to, it's fine to say you kind of also had a crush on this other lady.
I'm willing to believe the time it was true by the, so part of the reason I wanted to read this is a little like getting the cart before the horse, but I don't care, is eventually I would like to do the Divine Comedy for this.
Yeah.
That's probably a long ways off. It's a big book and there's kind of some other prep I maybe want to do before we do that. But like, I don't know if I want to bite off like Canterbury Tales, but we should probably read Canterbury Tales before we do the Divine Comedy. It's referenced a lot. things like that. By then Dante is like, deification of Beatrice takes such an absurd elaboration that I think it's interesting to start here. I went the other way. I read Divine Comedy first and then I read Vita Nuova. That was interesting in its own right. That is the direction we are going in time that I would like to do at some point.
Yeah.
So she the screen woman dies and he's like, oh shit, I have to go and like actually be sad. But I was actually sad. It's not like I didn't like her, it's just like she wasn't the one I loved, right?
Fine if you also had a crush on her, Dante. I'm not judging you.
Well, he writes a whole like sonnet about like, oh, you know, death comes for all those who love and everyone hates death and death sucks.
Yeah.
Basically. And then he goes on to, I love the way in which he just like very straightforwardly explains the first part is naming death and all the colloquial names for death. The second part is about how much death fucking sucks and how much I want to curse him. And the third is like, everyone believes like this. It sucks.
I think this is also the one where before it, he's also like, so that people will really know that I was so hung up on this lady and, you know, be able to continue a little bit of my screen because I really loved Beatrice. I made sure that it was really, really obvious and clear, even in the poem to people reading it, that it was about how death sucks and I was sad that she died.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he still explains it. And I'm like, this is so funny.
Yes. That kind of wraps up our first eight parts, really short, especially after the last couple episodes where we had huge homeworks. I was trying really hard to give us light homeworks for at least the first little bit here.
Yeah.
Because we didn't want to replicate, we never want to replicate the experience we had reading Lord Arthur.
Yeah.
If we could never do that again, it would be good for everybody.
Oh, I took this off the shelf. I know I said this to you, but I'll say it on the podcast. I took this little book off the shelf, which I took the dust jacket off because I usually have that off when I'm reading.
So I had not done that until you mentioned the thing you're about to say. And I was like, oh, this is very nice. I put a picture on Blue Sky just tonight if people want to go back a couple days, 5 days, I guess. Find my tweet about it.
And so it's still like a nice little hardcover and there's this like line art on it that's very nice. And I was like, one, this is just a nice looking book. It's also nice to hold. It's just like the hardcover is like a, you know, gives it a good sturdiness, but it's like nice and small. And so I just picked it up and like opened it up while I was standing there at my shelf where I have all of our other elf books on the same like bookshelf. And I just looked at Mort Arthur and I remembered how miserable just holding that to read was.
Yes.
It's for sure the worst book just like physically to hold in your hand while reading that we've read for this podcast.
This book is said like it makes me want to buy physical books. So I don't typically do outside of the books for this podcast. It just has like a pocketability. It wouldn't fit in an actual pocket, but like it fits in a bag. It's like a book you carry with you and it's with you for a week or two. And then you put it up back on the shelf and it's just like cozy and small and like for humans. Yeah. And it's just so pleasant.
Slides so nicely into a purse.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's my praise for the physical book.
Yeah. I have talked, if you subscribe to the Normal Mapping Patreon at $5, you get Blockbusters, where me and Jackson every month watch a Hollywood movie. Is usually the remit. It gets a little broad sometimes, but mostly we're watching very popular Hollywood movies. We watched Hannibal a couple months ago, and I talked at length about, and we this season was already planned. That was lead up to this a little bit. I talked a little bit about reading Tom Harris as a youth and Tolkien kind of at the same time got me into classical literature. And it's specifically because in the movie Hannibal and the book Hannibal, Hannibal Lecter, when he escapes in the end of Silence of the Lambs, eventually finds his way to Florence where he like kills and takes the place of a Dante scholar just because he's smart. He just knows all this stuff. And so there's a lot of Dante stuff in Hannibal, the film and the book. I saw the movie first and I read the book. I talk a bit about this on the episode. But famously, there's an opera that Ridley Scott produced for the movie that didn't exist before. It was written for the movie of the first sonnet of La Vida Nuova. And in that, like the detective who's chasing him and his wife are there and Hannibal's there. And he sees them after the performance and reads the first sonnet out to the detective's wife and is very menacing about it. She's very charmed because he's a very charming man. But the detective is basically like pissing and shitting himself. And it was just a formative experience for teen me, because I think it's very romantic, is what I would say. And so I wanted to read a little bit of it. I'm going to read the version we have here with the Luzzi translation, but then I'm going to read the Mark Musa translation, which is what is used in Hannibal, the book and the movie. I'm not going to read the entire sonnet, but I'm going to read most of it. Because I couldn't find the entire Musa translation, is the actual reason. So it goes, a third of night had already eclipsed, the shining of the brightest stars on high, when suddenly love came before me. The thought of him still haunts my troubled mind. This is capital love. Earlier, the poem talks about God of love. He held my heart in his hand and seemed all joy, my sleeping lady wrapped inside his arms. Then he awakened her, and she, in fright, began to humbly eat my burning heart. And then I saw him disappear in tears. Which is, you know, the minute he devotes an entire sonnet to the way in which just witnessing Beatrice a second time ensorcelled him for all time. You know, the devouring of his heart and love itself offering it to her and she taking it. Woman who barely knew he existed, probably. Let's be real. So it goes. It's you know, this happens. So the Mark Musa translation goes, the first 3 hours of night were almost spent, that time when every star shines down on us, when have appeared to me so suddenly that I still remember the memory. Joyous love seemed to me the while he held my heart within his hands, and in his arms my lady lay asleep, wrapped in a veil. He woke her then, and trembling and obedient, she ate that burning heart out of his hand. Weeping, I saw him then depart from me. It's just good. The description, trembling and obedient, she ate that burning heart out of his hand, has lived rent-free in my brain for 25 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like one of the things that made me a classic sicko. That's all. That's all I wanted to provide here in this podcast.
It's a good bit.
My biases. Yeah. That's romance, is someone eating your heart.
Yeah.
To me.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know if you have anything else. It's a short reading. I understand that.
Yeah. I don't have too much. There is a really charming quality to, because this is also just like earlier Dante poems, right? Which doesn't mean that they aren't good, but there is still a little bit of the, like, high school love poem. It's just, like, stepped up a notch, you know?
Yes.
But there is, like, something that comes from that same kind of earnest corniness that I really appreciate about a lot of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes you're 16 and you're just like, fuck, I love a girl so much. I have to write a poem about it.
I actually think he's 18 because it's 9 years. He first sees her first 9 years, and then he sees her again on 9 years after that.
Yeah. Still but a teen.
I get the impression, I don't know how fair this is, I get the impression in this era that, like, being an older teenager, everyone was just still kind of like, it's like the Romeo and Juliet thing. I know they're like 14 in that, but everyone just feels like a child in like a really like profound way.
Yeah. And I think some of it is the like, having the level of class that, like, the thing that you do is, like, writing and learning and reading things, just means that compared to, like, so many other things from around this time, there would be about, like, just a normal person, right, who, like, doesn't have access to these things. It's just, like, I already have, like, two kids and a farm and I've gone to war.
Yes.
And it's just, like, you're just over here, you know, replicating the thing that we just have far more access to now of all children, which is just this state of just like, you don't really have to go out and do something yet. You can just kind of sit around, reading things and learning things. And that's what you do right now. And I think it is its own, like, weird state of... I mean, I don't think it's, like, full Arrested Development, but it is just a very different life, right? That feels more like what childhood is, especially from our modern perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the implication is until you're married and have kids, you just aren't an adult, right? It doesn't matter how long that takes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you absolutely get that even in... like, you read, like, Jane Austen stuff where, you know, someone's getting, like, quite old but is not married yet, and they're still just kind of a kid out, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's it then. Short time, but we're back to Saga. Sometimes it's short. Doesn't mean it's bad. In fact, I had a great time. But next time we'll be reading parts 9 through 23, much more of the book. We had to get through the introduction, which was, like, a little denser because some of these parts are very, very short. If you're playing along at home, I do want to note that we will take a break after that for 1 week because you're out of town. And then we will be back to finish it off before we move on to our next book. Would you like to tell us people what we're doing the rest of the season?
Yeah. So after Vita Nuova, we'll be doing The Town or Tambokugn, which is, you know, Irish classic.
I'm going to be on. I do want to note, I'm going to do my best. I swear to God, I'm going to do my best when we cover that to pronounce everything. But I keep having you say the name of the book because I am not sure of myself. So I'm going to do my best. I swear to God, I will make the effort, but it's hard for my dumb American brain.
Yeah. Irish truly just like following very different rules.
Yeah. No, I understand why. I don't want to like make poke fun at it. I think that's rude. I just recognize that I have a hard time with it.
Yeah. And especially like if you don't know anything about how Irish works, you just look at Cúigne like spelled out and you're like, how the fuck do I say that? And then someone says it and you're like, that's closer to what it looks like than I thought it would be. And I still don't know how to say it.
There was like a TikTok I watched like 3 weeks ago that explained why Irish spelling looks like that to like an English speaker. And it made it make sense in a way that I'd never heard like presented to me before.
Yeah.
But it doesn't actually like it didn't make me better at doing it. You know, I have to actually do some work if I want to do that.
Yeah. It like explained how there are these specific rules. And you're like, oh, OK, now I understand. But it doesn't actually like
a lot of those like silent letters are like modifiers to push the sound in one direction or the other that English doesn't necessarily have.
Yeah. And a lot of it is set up that way because you'll have like a root word and then the modifier is pushing it into a different like sound because of, you know, the way that just conjugations and stuff work. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is still. Yeah.
Yeah.
I go through this every time that I have to talk to someone and, tell them my name and how to spell it.
Yes.
So,
So that'll be 6 weeks of that. In between those, there will be 2 weeks where I'm gone for my, probably 2 weeks where I'm gone for my surgery and recovery. If you don't know, I have a major surgery coming up. I will be out for a little while. We just don't know how long yet.
Yeah.
I promise when I come back, this will be the first podcast I come back to. I like it a lot. So,
yeah, I will say there's going to be 2 weeks where we're not doing the saga, at least, you know, it could end up being longer. We'll see how that goes.
God, I hope. I fucking hope.
But like, even if it's like exactly 7 days or whatever, and you get out in time that you could record.
We would just do something. I would be very tired. It'd probably be like a very short episode. Yeah.
I'm going to strongly encourage you not to record. And if you're very like, I want to record, I'll be like, okay, let's just do a 30-minute shoot the shit. Get out of here.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I've recorded under worse circumstances.
Yep.
After that, we will be doing The Lesser Key of Solomon, Goetia Book of Evil Spirits by L.W.D. Lawrence, which is a ridiculous little tome of magic and demonology that is kind of outside of our remit, I feel like. I feel like we're a little touristy.
Yeah.
Would you like to tell the people why you chose this?
I mean, I was just thinking about it because of IBO coming up.
Yeah, I have a podcast called The Great Gundam Project. If you don't know, I assume everyone knows. That's on the Patreon, $1 a month, patreon.com/normalmapping. And next year, we are watching Iron-Blooded Orphans, where all the Gundams are named after demons in The Lesser Key of Solomon. That's it. That's why. Yeah.
Just really commits to the devil's mission.
Yeah. And then after that, we'll be reading the Iliad.
For fucking ever.
Yeah, the translation by Emily Wilson. That one, I picked it because I'd read her version of the Odyssey and I really liked it. And I remember that being reasonable. And then I was like, we'll do it. And I bought the book and then it came and I was like, oh no, it's enormous. And then I was looking at the parts and I was like, well, we could do like two parts a week maybe. And then I was looking at how many pages it was. It was like 60 plus pages of like dense verse. And I was like, no. It'd take 2 hours every week. We can't do that. And so we're doing one chapter at a time, but that does mean that we're going for, it's 24 parts and we'll be doing one a week. We will be reading the Iliad for 6 months. Currently we're set to finish in March of next year. So yeah. My apologies. I hope you like it.
Yeah. And there is a skip week in there.
Oh yeah.
Which definitely the December 24th one, the one that we record on Christmas Eve. I'm not going to be doing, so I'm going to be spending that with my family and everything. Whether or not I travel, I'll still be like, you know, even if I'm home, I'm going to be figuring out getting stuff under the tree for my kid or whatever, you know.
The only reason I don't pout about this is because you have a child.
Yeah.
I would record on Christmas Eve. I would record on Christmas Day. Do I have an overwork problem? Yes. Look.
somewhere in there we will schedule. I just am not scheduling when we're doing that book 14. It could honestly be before the 24th or something. Like, we'll see how it shakes out, but okay. My guess is it will be later. Mm-hmm. But it'll be sometime when I'm on break and I'm home. We'll record that. So
okay.
That will happen. We'll get that in there during my Yule break, but
yeah, some of us don't have Yule breaks, so I'm going to have to do my best.
I know.
I cannot do it like immediately after the next one. I don't think I can cram two of these in like a week or
something.
Yeah,
I'm not going to be able to fucking do that either.
Yeah.
Because also somewhere in there, I'm going to have to get the New Year special recording in.
Oh, right.
For Ghost Divers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then nothing on the schedule yet.
Oh, for season 6? Yeah. We know what season 6 is. We're not ready to announce.
We're not announcing it. It'll probably be somewhere in the middle of fucking Iliad where we announce it.
Yeah, since it's so far away, I have no real compulsion other than my own impatience to announce it, because people will run off and get excited. I think it's people are going to be really excited for season 6, I'm pretty sure. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't want to talk about it until probably like October at the earliest.
I was thinking we could just do it as like a New Year's thing, you know?
Oh, that works. I was like, maybe a birthday treat for me, but no. Well, yeah, New Year's sounds great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we'll still have 3 fucking months or whatever.
Look. It's fine.
I'm excited. I'm really excited to read the Iliad. I also look at it and I'm like, we have never spent this much on a book.
When I presented this to you and I was having a minor freak out, like, what do we do? You were like, I'm patient. We can just slowly work through it and there'll be time after that for more books and you don't have to worry about it. And I was like, okay, I trust you on this. I'm not good at patience. This is a thing about me that I know is true and I work on. And so for you to also go, sheesh, is a long fucking time. Does not fill me with confidence. It does not fill me with confidence.
I mean, I'm excited about it and it'll, you know, be the time that it takes. Yeah. I'm all of that. It's just the slightly new experience of looking at a book that we're going to read and being like, this is a Ghost Diver season, a long Ghost Diver season.
It's a long Ghost Diver season. Yes. And that's every 2 weeks. This is every week. Yeah. I mean, the things we want to tackle will require us to read longer books as we go on, right? Like, it's totally there on the table.
Yeah. And I would rather we do it at a slower pace than read a bunch every week and then feel.
And then hate it. And
feel the pressure. I mean, and like.
Even the end of season 4, like the two long Berlin Alexander plots, I was like, I'm kind of sick of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did have to go, how the fuck am I going to fit a 2-hour movie into my schedule? And then I was like, 3-hour, fuck.
The 2-hour was great. The 3-hour, thankfully I woke up really unwell one morning and just did it then. Like, literally the sun rose as I was watching it. And that's good because I didn't have anything else to do because I would have found something else while watching that movie. It wasn't very good.
I had a time pressure. I did not say this on the episode. I had a time pressure where I was like, I really need to be able to watch it in these 3 hours. And then I was having streaming issues. Yes. From the thing that I was streaming it from. Yeah. And so at a certain point, I did just switch over to VLC to watch my legal copy that I acquired, very legally. Cause I managed to get it off of the thing that I was streaming it from legally that way. And I did put it at like 1.5 so that I could finish it in time to go to bed.
I'm not here to judge you. I'm not going to judge you for that.
I mean, it is extremely rare that I put any like movie or something on 1.5, but I was not having fun and I wanted to go to bed. And I was like halfway through.
Incredible. That's the end of the sagas for today.
Yep.
Yeah.
I have like one main thing.
Yeah, sure.
Well, I guess it's kind of two. So I finished reading Wodokoi.
Yes. Oh yeah, I didn't know you'd finish, but that does make sense.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. It was definitely in that space where I kind of liked it more when it was just the fluff, when it was just the
Me too.
Here are the people hanging out. And it's like
just the four of them playing games and stuff. I think, and like talking about like cosplay and shit. I think it's the greatest manga ever made.
And then even when like, Nao and Kokun join in, right? It's just like, oh yeah, you know, and then you have like your brother who's not as big into it, but you're still like hanging out or whatever. Like this is still a vibe, right? But every volume would have the like ongoing story thing, and they were more serious in some of the later volumes. But not serious enough to really hit most of the time. I think the stuff with, like Naru and, why am I drawing a blank on his name? Hirotaka. I think some of the stuff with them is the best because it's a little bit more low key, like low stakes. They're just trying to figure out the relationship. So that stuff hit for me. Especially the, like Ko and Nao stuff, I was just like, okay, this would all be better if it was gay.
Yes.
It is very funny that they have Kabakura at the end think it's gay. I don't remember them ever resolving that. Like confusion. Yes.
Yeah, so Wodokoi, if you don't know, is the story of these four friends who all work in an office together, and they're like kind of paired off. It's like these two childhood friends. The girl's like a Fujoshi who writes fanfic and is kind of a gremlin, and the guy is like basically like an autistic gamer.
Yeah.
She's like, no guys can stand me. And he's like, I like you. And she's like, why don't we date? And then they realize that they're like perfect for each other. And they have these friends at work who's like the guy who's like the most normie anime fan who just collects booby statues and is fucking hot as shit girlfriend.
Yeah. She deserves so much better than him. The whole.
Yeah. She like many hot as shit women in the world. She just loves mid men.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a whole arc where it seems like they're going to break up and then it ends with them getting engaged. And I was like, this is the worst possible outcome. Dump him, honey. Like,
he's not like actively terrible or anything, but he is boring. He's mostly like she gets to project all her boys' love feelings onto him. And I love when that's the case. I think that's just fun.
Yeah. They fight a lot in a way where I'm like, I do think that you would just be happier in different relationships.
Yeah, but they also fight a lot in a way where I'm like, oh, the sex must be fucking fantastic.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. It's a really cute. Mostly they play video games because they're all like work in an office and they're all kind of just like, you know, 20 somethings. And they just kind of hang out and talk about their nerdy shit, play Monster Hunter, stuff like that. It's cute. Everyone I've recommended it to likes it. You are like the person I was most hesitant about because you were on record as saying you do not like fluff. You like when your relationships are highly frictive and about like people recovering from their harms and traumas. None of that here.
Yeah. The thing is, I do enjoy, like, it's not going to be my favorite romance thing ever, but I do sometimes enjoy some fluff stuff, especially if it's more just like adults being adults and hanging out. I think a lot of the high school fluff stuff gets like really tiresome, because I think it's just so excessively tropey, right?
Yeah.
But that's like beyond it just being kind of fluffy. But yeah, the thing that I always, you know, the thing with fluff is then when it tries to go serious, but it won't actually commit. That's always the part where I'm just like, you should have just continued to be like fun hangout vibes of here's some adults dating.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I felt, I mean, I still did like 4 stars or whatever. Right. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's like a huge success in my mind. So, I mean, it's as good as Berserk. So.
Yeah. And since I finished it, I started a new manga.
Oh, fuck. What'd you start?
I started Cantabile, or Nodame Cantabile.
Oh, Nodame Cantabile. I think I spelled that right.
Yeah. I'm only 4 chapters in. I think, like, there's 6 chapters in the first volume. So it's, like, a little over halfway through the first volume. But immediately, the paneling is excellent. I'm having a great time with that. Remains to be seen exactly how far the story is going to go, but it is just committing to like the lead boy, kind of just being like a stuck up asshole in a way that I think is going to create a lot of good drama. The basic premise, it starts with, Chiaki, who is the stuck up asshole boy. And he's like, they're at a, music, like undergrad. They're like a college for music in Japan. And he's like, well, one, he's afraid of flying. But then also somebody else gets this like opportunity to go and be a conductor in Europe. And he wants to be a big conductor, and is currently just doing the like piano program because he wants to get his piano skills up to be a conductor. Cause he's like, I'm such a great conductor and I'm going to be such a great conductor that I don't even need to take classes about being a conductor. Cause again, he just kind of sucks. And so he's all like upset about how this other boy gets to go and, go to Europe and like do some conducting thing. And so he like crashes out in the middle of like a one-on-one lesson with his professor, and quits the class. And like, because of that, he's no longer eligible to do like this big event that he was practicing for. And it's like going around that he like got kicked out of class and not that he quit and stuff. And so he ends up in like this other class with a professor, instead, because it's like the only piano teacher left that he hasn't, crashed out on apparently. And that like, so that night he gets very drunk and tries to go home and passes out in the hallway of the apartment building, like, near his door, which is very close to the door of Nodame, who's the female lead. And so she like drags his drunk ass into her apartment, just being like, this person is drunk. I'm like, let me make sure that they're okay. And he wakes up in the morning and she's playing piano and he's like, oh wow, you play so beautifully. But her house is a fucking mess. It's just like trash bags everywhere and like, you know, food that's been left out for months, just like in bowls and shit.
St. Juiced.
Yeah, yeah. Not that many mirrors.
Okay.
But yeah, so then they end up in class together because the like professor he gets put with is Nodame's professor. And the professor's like, I want you two to do a duet together. Because, Nodame is really good at the feeling, but she's bad at, like, actually reading. Like, she doesn't know the sheet music, and she can, like, read sheet music, but she can't really play from it. She, like, adds notes and everything. She's kind of sloppy with that. And so it's like, I want you, boy who's really good at the technical side, but, you know, you get the sense that he doesn't have the feeling, right? Is the vibe. He's not able to convey that, but he's like, you know, I want you to teach her how to like play all the notes properly. And they go through the whole process of playing, and he's like trying to teach her, and he realizes at the end that it was all a ploy by the professor to like get him to get some of the feeling and like understand why he would enjoy playing piano instead of it just thinking like, oh, I just have to like do the notes, right? I have to be like accurate and that's it. In the process, he like helps clean her apartment. She's like immediately smitten with him because he's just like cleaning her apartment and cooking food because she just eats absolute garbage. And is like helping her learn how to play the sheet music. So she's like, wow, you're so great. And he's like fully, you know, oh, this annoying girl. But then where I left off, a new boy was introduced that Nodame was going to like help him do the exam where he does electric violin. And he's also like a very, you know, plays with feelings, but is kind of sloppy with the notes. And Chiaki is starting to get upset about that, but in a way where it seems like he's going to take it out by maybe making some stupid decisions with his ex-girlfriend. So that's, I'm excited. I feel like shit's going to get messy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's basically the summary of the first four chapters. But, yeah, and the handling is great.
I have no manga updates. I should be reading X, but honestly, I just haven't had any time. My life has gotten so out of control busy right now.
Yeah.
I would say I'll do it when I'm on recovery from surgery, but I've already scheduled some stuff that I'm going to do while I'm recovering from surgery because I'm an idiot. Don't have my problems. If you just never say yes to things. That's my advice. It's not my advice at all. You should say yes to things in life. Yeah. I should learn to say no to a couple things, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm excited to hear more about this. I want to read it, but I don't know if I will get to it by the time you're, like, reading it. Like, done reading it, realistically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, I'm enjoying it, so. Mm-hmm. And it does seem like, because it's 24 or 25 volumes. Yeah. But like the vibes that I have on it are some of it is gonna go a bit faster because there are parts where they're just playing. And I think like she captures the sense of people are playing music just like through paneling and the images and like people talking, right, while they're like practicing or whatever. Really well, but it does mean that sometimes you just get pages where there's like barely any thing written there because it's just people playing music.
I like this in my comics. Maybe it's like the you know, Western indie comics loser in me. I love a decompressed piece of storytelling. Like Yotsuba is one of my favorite comics. Deep into Yotsuba, like once you get to his later volumes, there's just entire chapters that are like landscapes and like quiet moments. There's very little text happening. When I was trying to get into more shoujo, one of the first things I tried to read was Ouran High School Close Club. And that is like the antithesis of that. That is like the most, every page is like nine panels packed with text in a way that would make like Cromarty High School blush. And I was like, this is exhausting to read. I just cannot hold on to it in my brain. I just don't like my comics that way.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely pages, like I sent some of the screenshots they did of just like the paneling and stuff. There's definitely parts here where it's a little bit denser in text, and then there are parts where
I'd not seen these. Let me take a gander at these. Oh, this is a nice looking book.
Yeah. And like these first few ones are like him going through memory, and then I really like this part of it like sort of coming back to reality in the fourth image. I think that stuff's done really well. I also just love Nodami. There's the part where it's the next morning and she comes to school being like, your belt, you forgot it in my room last night. Just like completely oblivious to how everybody else is going to read this. She's great.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's absolutely, I included in here the part where he compares her to a dog, as they said. When you start reading a romance novel and one of the romantic leads compares one of the other ones to a dog, you know it's going to be good. Yeah, I feel like that's the main thing. I've watched a fair number of movies, but that's stairwells talk.
Wow, what the fuck? You're not even recording a stairwells right now, are you?
Well, I have not watched any movies since the stairwells that we recorded.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah, I'll listen to that tomorrow then. That's fine. Could you tell me what the movies are and I'll... I guess we're recording next week. I can if I have anything to say, I'll listen to stairwells and I'll respond like we used to do.
I mean, I can quick just run through. We talked about Police Story on this.
Okay, yeah.
We
talked about that on Elf, so we're good.
Yeah. Like on Elf we talked about Police. I think I just point people to this for that. Okay. But here's other movies that I've watched. Knives Out, you knew that one. I think. Yes. Of course, Urotsuki Doji, you know that one.
Yeah.
School for Postmen.
Yeah.
The Red Balloon.
Okay.
Lara Croft, Tomb Raider, and then Neighboring Sounds was the stairwells movie.
Oh, yeah, there's nothing I care about there.
Yeah. but yeah, we did get this book that's like, hey, kids, watch this, or whatever. That's been fun. That's where School for Postmen and The Red Balloon came from.
It just seems like a bunch of, like, here's a way to get into cool old movies for children, right?
Yeah, and the thing about it is it's, like, some of these stuff I could just do myself, right? I could be like, oh, this is a movie that you would like, and I've sometimes done that, or that you might like. But one, like, something like The Red Balloon I might think about, and I'd be like, how much do they actually talk in that? I don't remember if they talk a lot. If it's just a bunch of subtitles of people talking in French. I don't think it is, but, like, I don't remember. Right? And they just see it in this book and, like, the specific age range it says. You're like, oh, okay, this is probably going to be fine. Or, like, you know, I also remembered that The Red Balloon kind of ends a little bit abstractly with the kid flying up and stuff. And I'm like, how weird did that ending get? So just seeing it like listed in this book of like, oh, here's a movie for kids in this age range. Does a little bit of that. Like I haven't watched this movie in 20 years. I don't entirely remember, if this is a good movie for a kid. I think it might be. But I think the bigger thing is it's just a book that my kid can look through and be like, oh, this movie looks fun. And even if I would have said that same movie, right? The fact that it's not me as the parent being like, let's watch this, just means that by default, they're going to like, you know, be more patient with it, I think.
Yeah.
So
I talked on the last VoIP Life about how do people no Blockbusters? I think it was Blockbusters. How people even get into movies in the modern era. And like it's gonna be through things like this. You have to like actually provide works to help people get into movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's super cool.
Yeah. And there's a little thing in the back where you can write the reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm mostly letting my kid handle the star rating stuff and the you know, what we write for the review.
Yeah. What's the name of this book again?
Hey Kids, Watch This, I think.
Okay. I have to do my writing things down, you know.
Yeah.
All right. I would like...
I guess it's from A24. So.
Okay. Yeah. We had so many questions that we didn't get to. I would like to drain the bucket a little bit every week until we're done.
Yeah.
Are you amenable to this?
Yeah. We can do like one or some. I want this to be slightly shorter because I got to leave. I got to wake up early
tomorrow. I'm aware.
I know.
I'm aware.
I know.
Then you went on about manga for 30 minutes.
Well, people come here expecting something and it's me reporting in about manga.
I was like, wow, you're not going to give me a chance to talk about one of my things? Okay, that's fine.
You can talk about one of your things.
After we do this question. First one is from Dr. J Revenge. I'm literally going to probably go in order in like one or two a week. It's going to be really slow. But we have literally 6 months, so it's not. It's fine. Please describe the type of helm/hat/headgear you would like to wear if you were an RPG protagonist.
And when I envision myself as a RPG protagonist, I don't think I'm wearing a hat or anything, that feels out of the spirit of this question.
It is a little out of the spirit of the question.
Yeah.
I have like an idea of what I think you would have, but like I feel like I want you to provide an answer first.
Yeah. I mean, some of it depends on the, if I'm just like going kind of generic JRPG, right? I think it's like, I have one of these, black hats that's kind of like, it has a bill in the front, but it's like puffy, you know?
Uh-huh.
I think it would be like that, but with like kind of obnoxious accessories on it, right? Definitely a chain on it that's like maybe attached to like an earring or something because it's just over the top JRPG style.
You're getting world ends with you with it
a little bit, except like I'm imagining it more in a fantasy context, but where it's doing a little bit of the like Final Fantasy kind of moderny at the same time.
Yeah I was going to say for you I envisioned like a Major Kusanagi like cyber visor sort of thing going on.
Oh yeah, if it's like a sci-fi thing, yeah. If
Fantasy Star is a RPG.
That's true. The other thing I was thinking of is kind of like a Red Mage style hat.
Ooh, the Red Mage is super swag with it, so I approve.
Yeah.
When I was playing 14, Red Mage revitalized my playthrough of 14 once I got level high enough level to play as Red Mage. See, it's like the one class where you're still doing stuff.
Me and the
but are a DPS.
I sent an image of all the Red Mages from Final Fantasy 3.
Oh yeah, they're cute. Mm. They're not as good as the Red Mage from Final Fantasy 5, but you're allowed.
Okay.
You know I'm a 3 hater, especially this version of 3. Who's a Luneth? There's no such character in Final Fantasy. I think mine would be like a crown. In the classical like royal sense, like, but like I think it would be a little Queen Amidala with it, with like an elaborate like dangly pearls and chain sort of vibe.
Yeah.
Just really excessive. Like a character that really isn't meant to take hits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely have a cool sword.
Oh yeah. I don't have a cool sword.
I
have people who I call my cool swords. There's a difference.
If I'm really going for it, it's like a cool sword that will also transform into like a spear.
Oh, sick.
Yeah.
It like unfolds like on a hinge or something. That'd be really neat.
Yeah, either that or like the kind of gets weirdly organic with it and like shifts.
Oh, yeah. I like that. That's good. That is our one question. Thank you. We'll do more next time. I'm not going to say don't send questions, but like, we're going to work through this backlog before I even look at the, what comes in the next 6 months. So,
yeah.
If you really care enough, you know how to find the emails. I'm not going to say it on this podcast. You know how to write into one of our podcast emails.
Oh, I just thought about the Atelier Shally, the name for the like green haired girl. I mean, they're both Shally, but one of them's Shallot and the other one is, I don't remember. But has the like cat ear hat.
Oh yeah,
okay. Yeah, that's a good hat. I don't know if that's mine, but that's a good JRPG protagonist hat, in my opinion.
I really like Leaf's hat in Pokemon Fire Red Leaf Green. I think that's a good hat. It's a fucking classic ass Pokemon hat.
The generation that I never played. Oh yeah, this is a good hat.
Oh really? Yeah.
Yeah, I never played any version of it.
Huh. I mean, Fire and Leaf Green is just a remake of Gen 1, so it's not really that.
But like the Game Boy Advance ones, I guess. Because what were the other?
Ruby, Sapphire, and Emerald.
Yeah. I never played those.
Because Diamond and Pearl is on the DS. I think Emerald's super good. I think it's a cool ass video game. It's probably my second favorite Pokemon.
It just really fell at that specific period where I was too old for Pokemon and too young to know that you can't really be too old for Pokemon, you know? Yeah,
I understand. That's how I ended up not playing Crystal. Yeah. And I skipped Ruby and Sapphire when they came out, and it was Fire Red Leaf Green being like remakes of the gen I liked that got me back in. And then I played that and I was like, oh, I'll play Emerald then, I guess. And I really liked Emerald.
Yeah, Crystal was like right on the tail end of me being into Pokemon and then being like, actually, this is stupid. So
yeah, just being like a couple years younger than me, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I tried to get back in with Diamond and Pearl, and I never really got on with those ones.
Diamond and Pearl is the last generation I was like doing everything in, and after that, when we get to Gen 5 in GGP, it's going to be very obvious that I fell off. When I'm like, I don't know who this fucking Pokemon is. I don't know a thing about him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone showed me a Pokemon just the other day, and I was like, I've never seen this motherfucker in my life, because they're from Gen 9. I haven't played that one. I don't have a Switch 2. I'm going to wait till I get a Switch 2.
I think I remember this.
Yeah, it was like a little, like, it was like a dung beetle kind of Pokemon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty sure Jouo posted it as, like, one of the Shaolia Bull Pokemon. Yeah. Anyway...
It's not Relor. What is it?
Okay. I don't know.
I told you. It was the evolved form, which I don't think I really encountered as much. Rabska is its name. That okay. One I don't. Relor, I know. That's the, it's even more just dung Pokemon, Relor.
Okay. What am I doing? So I got like halfway into Faggots, the Larry Kramer book, and I was just kind of like a little burnt out on it. It's kind of samey in the way it's like a, you know, critique send up of the culture of the time. And I wanted something a little more like thought provoking, I guess I would say. So I pivoted away, still in like pride mode on what I want to do. But I picked up Dagger on Butch Women, which is a collection of writings about lesbians, specifically with an eye to butchness and butch women, by Lily Barana and Roxy Linnea Due, which came out in 1994. Seemingly impossible to find an actual paper copy of this, but it is on Internet Archive if you'd like to just read it. Also, where all books are stolen, just around. You know, I have a PDF that I put on my e-reader and I've been picking at. I highly recommend it. It's very good. Just one of those that's like so focused on, because it's like essays from people all across the spectrum of like lesbianism. There's like stories from femmes about like how butches like interact with them and how they feel about them. Butches like talking about their own history. There's like a whole section on like butches who are now like, you know, female to male trans. The bit I'm reading now is about like on like daddy culture that's like coming like in vogue at the period, and like how some people are really squicked out by like, isn't that like incesty? And like, no, it's not really, but sometimes it is a little bit and it's a little weird, but also it like helps people work through things, and you know, it's complicated. And it's 94. So, you know, everyone is like, it just feels more authentic. There isn't like a codified language for a lot of stuff. Everyone's just kind of expressing their thing. And thus it can be messier and, to arguably more interesting. I know you align with this, where like,
yeah,
on some level there's been a flattening of the types of queerness that can be expressed like appropriately in the culture. It, like the monoculture is kind of fake, but it's not 100% fake, you know?
Yeah. I think also there's just a way in which like queer culture today feels like you're supposed to just say the thing that accurately describes what you are. Yes. So that people will instantly in like one word understand, like in a Twitter bio or whatever.
Yes.
And yeah. It really then does not create the space for the conversation about it, that like when I look at older stuff, people are just talking about their experiences with each other, and often having to like share language, but then also talk through how they're using it differently in like a far more, you know, they're actually connecting with people and talking about it.
Yes.
And obviously still like fights would happen and stuff, but, it just feels like there's a more genuine attempt for people to understand each other than people just being like, well, you can't call yourself a lesbian if you're also attracted to men. And it's just like, shut up.
One of the things I found interesting, and I kind of come from this where I've done a lot more like reading on like race and last century of culture than I have on like queerness in the last century of culture, but the parallels are definitely there. So much of this book just assumes everyone knows the ways in which like the feminist movement of the 70s ended up paving over huge swaths of like lesbian history and culture. When you had the, you know, the wave of burn your bra sort of feminists going around, and I'm critical of those people, but I want to say, like, you know, I'm supportive of feminism broadly, obviously. I don't know why I feel like I need to caveat on this podcast where like everyone's down who's listening, because no one would care otherwise. But the ways in which like that so much was about like eschewing certain traditional heterosexual gender roles, that it enforced a sort of like conformity along a new line that like really rubbed against, especially like butch femme lesbian communities, where like everyone had to be a certain type of androgynous. Everyone had to like reject entirely the like very likes the hyper masculine, the hyper feminine, which ended up like really like estranging people who didn't want to go along with the dominant force of how all women should like conform to this new paradigm. And if you were like a butch, if you were like a femme, everyone like in that space often found themselves very like estranged and alienated. It's like the thing that I'm supposed to dress and act like isn't like attached to my actual sexual and gendered identity anymore. So how do I even like navigate the space? And it seemed like maybe the feminist movement was very not accommodating to those people, like very like shut up or get out sort of thing. Which doesn't necessarily surprise me, you know. The intersectional failings of this movement in particular are well documented across any line you want to explore that stuff. Maybe most movements, this has the problem. But it is fascinating how like ubiquitous it is coming up. Everyone's like, the 70s were awful. Like everyone was like, everyone said they were like for women, but no one would actually support any of us. So we just all kind of like didn't know what to do anymore. And now the kids grow up and they have all these labels and they're like, they're into exploring gender, but no one like takes it seriously anymore. Because everyone's like, you know, we're just like play acting at like heterosexuality, and that's not what it ever was for us.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. Some people are like really excited for like the expansion. There's not a lot of like talk of transness in the book, except for the one chapter that's specifically about like people who are like transmasculine and used to identify as butch. And even that's like really murky, as you might expect from something from the early 90s. But some people are really excited for like the ideas of what explorations of broader gender identity are going to inevitably bring. And some people are definitely like, I really like my lane, which is like butch femme, very classic. Like this is what we do here. But it goes out of its way in many times to talk about like the ways broader society, straight society, gay male society, just people who are not in it. Even just lesbians who don't subscribe to butch femme, don't seem to understand like the things that this dynamic is doing in terms of expressing a thing that is not butches act like men, femmes act like classical traditional women, and it replicates heterosexuality. And talks a lot about the ways in which it's different. It by nature is different, that the way in which like lesbians doing this thing, like think about gender and process it, performing gender, is by nature different than the way heterosexual people perform gender. It doesn't matter how nice the guy is or how like, you know, down with it the woman is. It's just like, it has to be different by the nature of the thing. Queerness generates difference. That's what makes it queerness.
Yeah.
I think it's really good. Highly recommend people read it if you're interested in that sort of thing. The things are all over the spectrum. There's one that's just like a list of movies of like, here's movies that depict butchness as an idea. But it's like a list from 1994 from someone who's just like renting movies. And so it's like an outrageously like incomplete and inconsistent list in the way that's like very charming. There's like one piece that's just like where to buy like strap-ons and harnesses and binders and stuff, but specifically for people like living in California in the 90s, and like how, like which products are good and how to use them appropriately to like pack and like bind and stuff. It's fascinating. Not everything is like super relevant to everybody, but I've really enjoyed reading it. I'm nearly done with it. I'll be done by the time we record next time. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah,
I do recommend it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I always find that stuff very valuable. Like, even if sometimes there's stuff where I'm like, I don't agree with this specific part or whatever, it's still so much more interesting to, like, encounter that. Especially from just an older perspective on it. And
yeah.
Yeah. And often there are stuff where I'm like, oh, this is actually, like, interesting. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. These people 30 years ago, like, I don't have to agree. Yeah. They probably don't even agree with themselves anymore. Like, you know.
Yeah.
It's funny. I picked this book specifically because I got in a minor fight with Connor on the Ghost Divers I guested on. You listened back to this.
Yeah.
And Connor just was saying some shit I feel like a heterosexual man should not be saying about butch women and women who might love them. And what that represents is like reflecting society.
Yeah.
And I was like, I did some pushback and I was like, I feel like I'm not quite in my lane doing this pushback, but I feel like it needs to be done. And then I was like, I should do more reading on this. And this is where I've landed up.
Yeah.
I was also watching a documentary or something, and this book was referenced. I don't even remember what it was. I did some YouTube essay. It wasn't a real documentary.
I don't know if you've gotten around to it, but I did send some media burn stuff.
You did. Yeah. I watched one of them, the first one, the really long one, and I haven't watched the other ones yet, but they're on my agenda. I wanted to briefly, because I was only on the one episode and the other one's not out yet, I would like to talk about Dear Brother Here, because I could talk more explicitly than I can on GGP about it. Are you okay with this?
Okay.
Yeah. So we're gonna have a recurring brief Dear Brother corner.
I will say I finished the recording and said that I razzed you a little bit. You haven't listened to it yet. It's not out yet.
You know, I haven't heard it. Yeah, it's not out yet.
I didn't really razz you that much. I think I did actually do an explanation of like why I think that you identify with Miyasama and you know, the things, and then I did my little defense of Kaoru, basically.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Kaoru mostly frustrates me in her inaction, and I didn't really express that much last episode, but it's increasingly bothering me. I think that the ways in which she just is determined to like not get involved unless someone is actually in crisis is like she could do more help than she's doing. I'm not saying she's causing harm, but her inaction is not like enabling things to get better. And it does frustrate me, as like she's the most level-headed one here. She should probably do something. Whatever. So this is for 21 through 26, right? Episode wise?
Yes.
Yeah, because it'll be the one that's out on Friday when this comes out. So apologies if you haven't watched after that. Because I'm going to be ahead of even the Ghost Divers release schedule, because I watch along with Ghost Divers, but I also listen to Ghost Divers. You know how it is. Fukiko taking some L's, the set of episodes, I must admit. I can't really defend a lot of the things she does in these sets of episodes. It's fine. And St. Just manages to do things that endear me to her and make me kind of support her a little bit. Not entirely. I'm never going to be like a Ray stan or anything, but like I don't hate what's going on, you know? I mean, that's fine. The complicating actions are good.
I think I say on the episode that... especially in like the last few episodes, I'm seeing from Sanjus like a willingness to change and be different. Yes. And that's like that's an important thing for me in people in general, is like a willingness to change and grow. And I'm seeing
One of the things about Ray, or not Ray, about Fukiko that I find fascinating is there was a bit I was talking to. I think I was talking to Ina. I don't think it was you. I think it was Ina who said, I can't believe she's hung up on like one bad day she had when she was 12. And I was like, I remember clearly very bad days I had when I was a teenager. And they are like things I hold on toxic, like in a toxic way, like carry forward 20 plus years later. I think that's a pretty common thing for some people to do. Some stuff I don't remember of my childhood and my adolescence, but some things I hold on to way more than I should. I think that's pretty common. And the way in which these episodes reveal Fukiko's like fundamental despair, like makes me not like, I don't really support what she's doing. Right. Cause she does she does consider killing Nanako. She is like a mess. She has apparently done all this because she just doesn't want anyone to fuck this guy that she's like, hung up on. Henmi's not worth any of this, for the record.
Yeah.
Because I don't trust those motherfuckers one bit.
Connor says that he's a Jag, no relation to the Jacksonville Jaguars, go Jags. But he is a term from, I guess, also football and stuff, but of just a guy. He's just a guy. Yeah. He's like the pinnacle of he's just a guy.
Yeah, Ken doll motherfucker.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Disney Prince material.
Yeah.
Vapid. But the way in which, like, it's not even about him necessarily. Just like when you are a perfectionist, when you are like someone who's like hyper responsible, when you're succeeding, even though you don't think you have it in you, when you're like someone who's driven by these doubts and you're like very high performing and everyone just keeps giving you more and more responsibility, it feels like it feels impossible because you're like, I have to perform or people won't love me. And then the more I perform, the more responsible they give me, but I don't need responsibility. I need help, but no one even knows I'm in trouble, much less like what to do about it if they did. And the way that stuff like compounds and stacks and just makes you the worst version of yourself, where you have to be perfectionist because it's the only way anyone's ever expressed good feelings towards you, but increasingly you can't handle it. I went through this, you know, I'm very sympathetic to how Fukiko's thing goes. The part where she meets Rei and is like, we should die together. Like she's fauna or something. I'm like, don't that. That's too far. But like, I get because that's the thing is like the fundamental thing that like for me has been like a plus. And I understand this isn't true for everybody. Is I've never been like a self-harming. I've never been suicidal. So I've been depressed, but I've never been those things. And I'm glad about that. Right. Cause it seemed like hard things to work through. And Fukiko is just full on depressed and suicidal. Doesn't seem willing to go through with it when she's 13 or whatever, and which makes sense. But is willing to go through with it when she's like 19, whatever she is in this show. She's like 19, she's like 18 or 19, right? They're not, these are all kids. It's easy to forget, but they're all fucking children in this show. The part where she like jumps and then Rei catches her and then like holds her. And then she just like screams because it's worse than like having jumped to be caught. I'm like, man, like heart goes out to her. She probably shouldn't try to kill people as much as she does. But I found these episodes 25 and 26 are like genuinely fantastic episodes of any show. They're great. I really like that show so much. That's why I want to keep talking about it, even though I'm not on the episodes.
I'll say, and I think some of this, I got some context that like a lot of this series of episodes is just not from the manga. And so there's a little bit of, like Kaoru is like in a holding pattern waiting for manga stuff to happen from a production standpoint.
Yeah. I'm going to read the manga when I'm done with the anime. Yeah. I don't want to have that polluting my brain.
Yeah. And so I'm like, I'm curious to see her get developed more because there's a way in which she just kind of feels like she drops out of like so much of the vibe of these episodes in particular is like, everybody is having some of the like worst days of their lives, just like screaming and crashing out. And Kaoru is just like playing basketball and occasionally popping in being like, hey, what's going on? And it's wild. I do in the episode talk about how I feel, very close, like my high school self, close to mm-hmm. Kaoru, in a way that is, I think there's like I have sympathy for that. I also think it's pathetic. I think all of these people are pathetic teenagers. I think it's just a nature of the show is it's about being pathetic teenagers.
I think pathetic is so strong. It's so judgmental of a word when I mostly have sympathy, even for Kaoru, who like, I genuinely don't think I like is like the way she is as a person, but like, I wouldn't call her pathetic. I just think it's like the way in which she thinks she can take the high road, I think is like neglectful. And that's sad, but I understand how she gets there. Cause like, I wouldn't want to get involved in this mess either.
Yeah. Well, and I think some of it, like at least my read on it is a lot of it is coming from this like weird, in the same way that I like had self-harm tendencies that I also like turned inwards into weird sacrificial, like, if I just suffer, like, you know, if I allow people to do bad things to me and I just take it or whatever, like there's just ways that I can like take this on myself, which just doesn't fucking work. It doesn't work at all.
Yeah.
You can't actually do that. But I think there's like a way that she interfaces with like suffering where she thinks that that's help. Her suffering is like helping people. That is just an absolute fallacy, but I see that like method of thinking that I also had in high school.
In this way, I think Fukiko and Kaoru are very similar, right? They just express it so differently.
Yeah, Fukiko expresses it outwardly as violence against other people and
control of those people.
Yeah. And Kaoru is like turning it inwards in an abdication of control.
Just proof that if we ever knew each other in high school, we would have fucking hated each other.
Yeah, we would have.
Yeah, yeah. That's fine. I think that's all I have for that.
Yeah.
Do I have anything else?
Sneering at me while I eat out in the hallway with my fucking spiked hair.
I probably would have been afraid of you. I'll be perfectly honest. Yeah. I was very sheltered and square as a teen. I think I probably, I mostly was like chill with everybody. Like I was one of those people who just kind of flit between like social circles. Like I wasn't like popular, but I could kind of just like go wherever. I mean, my school was not incredibly stratified, I don't feel like, but, I think I probably would have been intimidated. Everyone I mentally like considered cool, I was mostly afraid of.
Yeah. Well, I probably would have like sneered at you as like future leader of America. Vibes.
Oh yeah, you know? Yeah. That's definitely a vibe I had. Yeah. It's weird because like everyone in my school that had that like applied to them other than me was like deeply Republican, and I was like the one liberal kid in high school. And so I was always like kind of outgrouped by that level. Also, I hung around with a bunch of losers because that's just kind of who the people I really identified with were, losers and loners and whatever. Turns out they were all gay. That was the secret. No one, half of them were not aware of this.
So that's the part that we shared.
Yeah. Christ. But yeah. I think that's it. What else going on? I got my ears pierced again.
Yeah.
And you're like, didn't you already do that? And I was like, yeah, but I got a second set in the lobes, you know? We're working up. I just wanted to report that's happened. I switched out my helix piercing and my nostril piercing for rings. Also, which I'm very happy with, because I didn't like the stud in the nose was a problem because it would get caught on fucking everything, like when I was like washing my face and whatever in the shower and stuff. And then the studs in the helix studs were fine, especially once they were shortened, but they would get caught in my hair pretty frequently, and sometimes with the masks and stuff. Not as bad with the mask, mostly hair. I have really fine hair, so it gets caught very easily and stuff. And the switch to rings just cleared that the fuck up. It's nice. I highly recommend if you, you know, when you can switch to rings, if you want to switch to rings, switch to rings.
Yeah. I want rings in my helixes, but I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
With my piercer. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like you also just had a bigger healing road than me, right? Like.
Yeah.
I did have my piercer put them in while, like, when I was getting the other piercer, I was like, would you just put these in for me? And it was a little tender for the first couple of days. Like they were not like 100% healed for sure. But it, she said it's fine. She went with it. Like, whatever. It's fine. Your body mostly is fine.
Yeah.
And if it's not, you'll know, cause you'll start like getting an infection.
Yeah. I do think that my lobes are getting to the state of healed where I can just put in other, like,
oh, nice,
earrings regularly now.
Yeah.
I still haven't been doing it too much because I'm just like, you know, part of it is like I'm still in the mode of just like, well, I'll do this for special occasions. I also, like, we went to a little, it was just a friend of Emily's opened up had a store relocated, so I had like a grand reopening or whatever. And I put in like the little strawberry Vivian Westwood earrings that I have.
Oh yeah, they're super cute.
Yeah. And then when I got back, I changed them from like the little dangly daggers that have like a little drop of blood off of them.
Yeah.
To, I have this pair that's like, it's just a tiny star and moon. So like a star on one side and moon on the other. So it's like, I think when I'm camping, I just want as like little, you know, as possible. Cause
my daily wearers are just like little, like, I have them in gold and silver, just like little ball studs. That's like nothing, like, really just like, I have them in multiple sizes. I just bought a pack off Amazon or whatever. I'm not too precious with my earrings. I have like 50 of them now.
I had one helix that kept trying to like grow up over the ball stud a little bit. In like a weird, like, you know, it had gotten kind of like weird and crusty once, something just like irritated it and was bleeding. And so I don't think it was like fully trying to grow over, but it was like going up it enough that I was like, I don't feel good about this. So I replaced it with the spike that I have, which is just like bigger and has a flatter bottom. That stopped it real good.
That's good. But yeah, normally I switch my earrings like on mood or whatever. Not super frequently. Like if I wear danglies, like when I come home, I take the danglies out and put studs back in, cause I don't want to like sleep with like dangly earrings in or anything. When I got the second lobe piercings, they haven't hurt at all, but they did cause my like lobes to swell up to the point where like I put in the studs and the studs are just staying for a while until the second piercings like calm down.
Yeah.
They're getting there. But for a while, my whole lobe, like even around the original lobe piercing was pretty swollen. I just kind of let it go until it went down.
Yeah. at this point, I feel like I should try some shorter posts in my lobes. When I went for the shortening or whatever, and they were like, oh, these ones, like, don't need to be shortened. But I still feel like they, like, easily stick out a little more. And so I might just, like, order some and do a little sanity, especially at this point where it's, like, you know, they're pretty healed up. But, and I just might put those in. Because at this point, I'm like, I feel like sometimes they would, like, still get a little irritated or something. And then not, like, swell up a ton, but just enough. I was like, okay, this is probably fine. But that's not been the case in forever. So,
The weird thing about switching to the ring in my nose specifically is I can kind of see it at the very bottom of my vision. So I'll, like, catch it every once in a while and be like, oh, right, that's there. Just like a little bit, just like in the fuzzy part of your peripheral vision at the bottom, which is not like a great like set of vision, but like enough that I noticed. I'm like, oh, right, there's a whole piece of metal there, which the stud did not do.
Yeah.
And it's always a little surprising. Also, blowing your nose and just being snotty with a nose ring fucking sucks.
Yeah.
This has been a discovery that should have been self-evident, but was not until the minute I was like, oh, I'm like really stuffed up today. Oh, this is awful.
Yeah. This is the thing that I've thought about with, because sometimes I mean, like, oh, like lip piercings or like, you know, nose piercings or something. But I know like lip piercings can sometimes fuck with your teeth.
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, nose piercings, blowing your nose and shit. I'm just like, nah.
Yeah.
For my like own convenience sake, I don't know if I'm going to go down that road, but I might end up getting a second or third lobe.
I intend to get three lobes in each, like the triple all the way up. Probably gonna do more helixes. I only have 1 year. So I'm done for now because like I'm having surgery in like in 6 weeks, 5 weeks when you're listening to this. And then I don't want to be worrying about like piercings healing because my second lobes will be done by then, totally done. And then after that, when I heal up from my surgery, I can go swimming because the pool will be open still for a little while because the pool isn't closed until mid-October and I'll be fully healed by then, no matter what kind of surgery I have. We don't really know what kind of surgery I'm going to have yet. They won't know until they actually get doing it, whether they can do it laparoscopically or they have to open me up. I hope they can do it laparoscopically. That would be nice. That's the attempt. But I will be able to swim a little bit. And so I don't want to have any open piercings. When the pool closes, I would like to get a tragus piercing done. That's like my next step. My piercer was like, I love traguses. You'll love it. It's great. Mm-hmm. And I was like, fuck yeah. If you're excited, I'm excited.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where we're at with that. It's exciting. Just in terms of piercings, I guess, fall under gender presentation stuff for me. I don't know. It's a little complicated. I made my first Torrid order this week because someone in the Discord was like, oh, there's a clearance on Torrid. And I just had never looked at it before. I had not gone shopping there yet, even though it's like the de facto place where it's like, go shop there. Like we've talked to like Autumn's. I know Autumn shops there and Molly said shop there. And you're pretentious. You're not going to shop at Torrid.
Yeah, I have not shopped at Torrid, but
yeah. Fine.
I'm not opposed to the idea of shopping at Torrid. I just have literally never gone there and shopped there.
Yeah. I'd had in my mind that it was like gothier, and Destiny was like, that's because I talk about how good it used to be and it's not like that anymore. I'm like, okay, that's where that came from. Because I went there, I'm like, this is normal clothes. So anyway, I went to the clearance section. I was only going to buy a couple things because I specifically wanted to test their sizing because you just can't trust women's sizes. They're all full of shit.
Yeah.
And so I was testing their sizing and bought like a couple things on clearance, nothing big. And a couple earrings are on clearance because I have a weakness for earrings. And just like stud packs that were very cheap. A couple danglies. But then I got them today and everything fit. I knew what I was looking for. In fact, I think it'll be like great. I think some of them might be a little big, but that's fine. And I realized it's June, mid-June. I bought a turtleneck sweater and a fucking jacket. Because I'm an idiot who keeps buying winter clothes even in the depths of summer because it's the fashion I care about.
Yeah, I had this where I got some stuff from Omocat and it was like distressed sweater and two sweatshirts. And I was like, well, I'll look forward to wearing that in fucking like 6 months. Good job, me.
I'm A friend, like two months ago, talked me into buying this pink leather jacket that was on eBay. And she's like, this isn't my size, but if it's someone's size, you should get it. And I was like, I think this is my size. I'm not quite sure, but it's cheap enough. I'm willing to take the risk. It's beautiful. I can't wait to wear it. It's like fucking bright pink, not hot pink, but kind of more of a pastel pink, but very bright leather jacket. Incredible. Got it for like $30 shipped. Fits great. But like, I'm like, I'm not going to wear this until like dead winter. It's a very heavy coat.
Yeah.
The turtleneck I would wear, like today it was like, the high was 80. It had rained a bit. I would wear it's a very light summery turtleneck. And that's kind of what I was looking for. Cause I don't quite have summer fashion locked in yet in terms of like an aesthetic. A lot of that is because a lot of the summer stuff is like more like skin exposed, a little more like just like layers of light stuff that I'm just not really comfortable with yet. Winter fashion, I've got it in the bag. Summer fashion, I'm like, that's for next year. I'll figure it out. I'll get there, but I'm not quite there yet.
Yeah.
I just don't quite know what I want. I'm slowly working up to it. The answer is like a lot of layers and like stupid, like, I don't know why they call them kimonos in women's fashion, but like the sort of like light, like over really long overshirt. I'm like, this isn't a kimono at all, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seems to be like where I'm going, like headed and that sort of stuff. But a lot of like tops, I'm like, well, I can't really get into these until like my tits grow in a little more than they have yet. I'm getting there. Not to get explicit, but I'm getting there. Gonna have to bra shop very soon. It's getting to be a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still feel like I don't quite have as much of a summer fashion as I do winter fashion.
Yeah. It's hard. I think it's really hard.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I look at like women at work, which is my guy model for this sort of thing. I'm like, everyone's just fucking wearing like capris and like a fucking normal top. I don't understand why women's top sleeves are cut the way they are. I don't want to show off my arms that much. I don't know how to like square the circle. I'll have to figure it out someday. Not today. Women demand longer sleeves on your short sleeve shirts. What the hell?
Yeah.
This has been my reaction to women's clothing and on this ALF. I don't think I have that much else. We have to get the putons and we can wrap it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in slight fashion update, I got my mini plus necklace. So,
oh yeah.
Yeah. I now have my Misato necklace.
That's great. You're also slamming back beers and hanging out with a penguin.
Jax and I haven't been hanging out that much.
Have you? Are you a beer? I don't feel like I've ever heard you talk about drinking beers.
I still drink beer some, but I used to drink beer a lot more. But I am allergic to hops, so that kind of limits the amount that I can drink beer, and also the beers that I can drink.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a way in which, like, this has just increased over time. Cause I used to drink a lot, including lots of beer and then, like, hard alcohol, you know, hard liquor.
Oh, yeah. I've never been much of a drinker, so.
And, at this point, if I do want to drink, I feel like sometimes I'll have a beer. Especially like there are certain meals where I just enjoy, like, a Japanese lager, you know?
Weird. Do you enjoy a Japanese lager? Who would have foreseen such a thing?
I just like it. It is good with ramen or whatever, you know.
Yeah, you're a fucking weird. I know. Is what you are.
I know. but there are definitely other. I like sour beers a lot. Mm. As just like something to drink, but also if it's like, oh, I'm gonna have a drink for a Ghost Divers. It's often more fun to like just make a cocktail myself. You know?
Yeah, that's fair.
So
I just don't keep enough alcohol on hand to like make cocktails at home.
Yeah.
But I do. I like beer wise. I like a summer shandy. I should probably get some of those. And then I like wheat beers. And that's kind of like the end of beer for me. I'm not a huge beer drinker.
Yeah. But yeah, it's also a thing of I'm even more careful about the alcohol that I drink since it might be a trigger for my like art stuff.
Yeah,
we don't really know, but it's also, it seems like a very easy thing to be like, I'm going to have less of that.
Yeah.
I used to have like a fair amount of tea in the afternoons in addition to coffee in the morning. And I've been cutting back on having that as another thing that could be contributing. So,
oh, or, you know, is it could like be a caffeine or is it just tea in general?
Sometimes I will have tea, but basically just like caffeine beyond the like.
Well, yeah, I was just like, could you switch to like herbal teas and like tisanes and stuff that don't have caffeine?
Oh yeah, I could. I don't like herbal teas as much.
Oh well, fair enough.
That's the problem there.
Yeah, fair enough. Putan 2.
Yeah.
Hokuto and Kamiyama is pondering Putan.
A grueling and serious examination of Kamari High School, a podcast within a podcast.
You passed.
Thank you.
I was struck with the horrifying realization that Connor didn't know you had a radio show, which I think this is fake. I don't think Connor's doing a bit. I just think Connor forgot. There's no way Connor didn't know this.
Yeah, I was like, I guess I can conceive of somehow this didn't come up, but I swear this has come up at some point. I swear I've told Connor about this.
Probably on a Putan, honestly.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. I know that you said the first 3 hours are mostly playing music. I have a hard time conceiving of you soloing 3 hours of audio.
I mean, so
I don't think I could solo 3 hours of audio. I think it'd be impossible.
I did it.
I know. I'm like, I can't even conceive of this. I understand it was a long time ago. You're a very different person, but like, I'm just like, how?
You just like, you do a little intro, you play some music, especially once I got to the Icelandic part, I was like, I would tell some story about it or whatever, you know, like I had bits that I knew about a lot of the stuff. So there's a little bit of me being like, oh, let me like talk a little bit about, you know, the Icelandic music scene at this time and blah, blah, blah. And then I play the music, you know.
The amount that you'd have to know about Icelandic music to do a regular radio show about Icelandic music for an hour, like every week, is like absolutely crazy to me.
I know. I've had Icelandic friends who are like, I think you know more about Icelandic music than most Icelandic people.
Yeah. So whenever I'm like, whenever you're just talking about Icelandic music and I feel like, oh, how do you, like, you're just like so into this. How do I even like, I don't even understand how you're, I'm like, this is how, I don't need to worry about it. It's fine.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm like, I don't really know that much about music all the time. I'm very bad at it. And I just don't have this. I just don't have this gene to like think about music this way.
Yeah.
I have a broader question about running a radio show. And I just, this is college radio, right?
Yeah.
So it's probably rules are a little different, but could you just play anything? Were there any rules about what you could and couldn't play?
There were rules specifically around like language, right?
Okay, but like there wasn't like here's the subset of songs you get, pick from among these. Like here's like you know, like when VTubers do karaoke, they have to do like from a certain set of like the 500 songs that are in the karaoke program they use. You didn't have something like that, right?
No, I mean, we had a library of like vinyl and CD that we could play from.
Yeah.
There was also at a certain point, like you know, we could play music from like an MP3 database, right? Yeah. That was not when I first started, but it got introduced like halfway through.
That makes sense.
But we, especially for college radio, we could play any, like most other radio doesn't play anything more for like, the capitalism advertising reasons of like, these specific record labels are like giving us money to promote their stuff. So we're gonna, we have to play from this stuff. But for college radio, you could basically play anything as long as it was like, you know, they weren't swearing and shit.
Hmm.
Couldn't say shit.
Damn.
But also it's fun because there's always the songs that, like Foggy Notion. I know that you don't know. Velvet Underground. They have a song called Foggy Notion where the way that they say foggy just kind of like slips closer and closer to fucking throughout that song. You know, there are plenty of songs that are kind of getting away with swearing and you could usually get away with playing them. Right. But I feel like that was the only real limitation. And then we had to record everything that we played, because there was like a certain amount to which the whatever record label, like, you know, owned to that would have to get some sort of percentage cut or something.
Oh, okay.
So that was the one other thing, was just keeping a record.
Okay. Yeah, I just don't know the mechanics of radio. I've never looked into it. Because by the time I realized I was interested in talking to a microphone, actual radio is not a thing anyone goes into anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, the big thing is it's like, you talk until you feel like you don't have much else to say, and then you already have your song planned out. And you just like kick it to the song, right? Like, it's not like a podcast where I'm just sitting there for 3 hours talking.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, it's like very, especially the first 3 hours where I was mostly playing music. You know, those first two were a lot of, I'm just going to play this song, you know, maybe going to like briefly tell a story about Velvet Underground or something. But, you know, not that much. And some people would purely just like play a song, come in, say that was blah, blah, blah. And then they'd say the name of the next song and then they play it and they play two songs. And they come in and they'd say that was blah, blah, blah. You know?
Yeah.
But
I,
the guy before me, was like a DJ-ass DJ and that like he was like mixing stuff live and shit. I was this is so much fucking wilder to me than what I'm doing.
Yes.
So, just like had like air horn noises on like a CD ready to go while he was like, you know, mixing between two different vinyl and stuff. And I'm just like, and then he just like came in and he had like such a, like, I'm just like a DJ playing to a house vibe. I was just like, this is fucking incredible.
So we have satellite radio in our car, because we got, my brother had it back when it was my dad's car, and we just kept it because I like it more than terrestrial radio. But me and Destiny listen to it on our commutes, which is like 20-30 minutes every, like, back and forth. And I just gotten very like in tune with like certain stations, like vibes and the certain DJs vibes. And like some of them I really don't like and some of them I really do like. And it just makes me think about the act of doing radio DJing. A lot of the old MTV VJs are like doing satellite radio shows on the various decades or like genres that they care about. Destiny's always happy about that because she was an old MTV head. It, like, content wise, like the decade stations are like the major pop stations, and like the first 10 stations, like they all use radio edits to cut out all the swearing. When you get to like the hip hop stations, all the swearing gets back in, you know, it's like, we don't give a fuck. We'll swear. That's great. The hip hop stations are great because the people, like, when they have like the special, they're like, the one that we end up listening to a lot is Rock the Bells, which is LL Cool J's station. And he's just on there a lot, just talking about music with other like rappers. It's fucking great. You want to listen to some people who love fucking music. Listen to some rappers talk about shit they're influenced by or things they're sampling. It's incredible. That's like the, whatever they're going on show that we're like, this is what we're parked on.
Yeah.
When the sleepy guy's talking about the Beatles for the 15th minute, I'm like, I want to fucking hang myself. The guy who does the Beatles station, he's insufferable. I love Beatles. Hate him. Hate him so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Part of it too. I never wanted to talk for that long until it was, you know, the 3-person comedy thing. I would sometimes provide some context, but it's like, I was never going more than like a minute or two. You know, just keep it snappy. I also remember the DJ guy who was before me was from Tobago, Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah.
Just had like the coolest accent too as he's just doing it. I was just like, you, like, it was like somewhat intimidating. It was just like, you are so cool. I have to follow this. He would always like do his big like throw over to me, right? Like just like fully in the mode, and then just be me being like, all right, you know, here's Sonic Youth. It was so funny.
One of the hardest things me and Destiny ever laughed at was we were listening to the radio. I don't even remember what station it was, but it was this February of this year, I'm pretty sure. There was a whole like bumper that was like, whatever station it was, here to celebrate Black History Month with Peter Frampton. And we fucking laughed until we cried. I love it.
Yeah.
Radio's so stupid. It's still stupid if you want to go out there and find it. Though I will say it's still like, even though it's like we've got like fucking 150 channels, we only have like the whatever the basic package is. I didn't spring for all. I've got to pay for that shit. there's still nothing on sometimes, like too often. There's just like fucking nothing on because I don't listen to any of the metal stations, and the country stations we just skip entirely. All their electronic stations are mid. I don't understand who their electronic DJs are, but in the package we have, there's not a single good electronic station in the bunch. And so you're flipping through like, you know, like the first wave stuff and Lithium, which is like grunge, which is that's where Destiny lives and all that stuff. It's like 80s new wave and stuff like that. Hip hop stuff, which you both like. I love the decade stations, even though they're often bad. I just find them fun. But you just hear sort of like they've been playing fucking Anxiety for a year. I swear to God, I'm like, this woman has more songs than this. Please play something else. It's killing me. This is how it is. The radio's the same no matter where you get it. Stop playing the one song.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll like hear songs. I'm like, oh, that's a song I only hear on TikTok in like 30-second clips.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Kendrick's Peekaboo, that's just the one bit where someone's showing off a cool thing from TikTok. And if you're on TikTok, you know what the fuck I'm talking about. Anyway. You passed. That's all. That's what I have for you today is reflecting on the radio because okay. That's the thing I was super interested in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, on the topic of radio, did you see that Hololive? We playing at Radio City Music Hall. Anyway,
that's great. It looks like they're actually like a huge venue that's going to sell out instantly, though. They'll probably sell out instantly.
Yeah.
Tickets seem kind of expensive. I'm going to be honest. I don't think I would pay for a VTuber concert. I think that's my line.
If they came to Chicago, I think I would.
Yeah. I guess if they're in my city, I would try to probably get tickets, but like, I don't think I'd travel for one.
Yeah. Anyway, it's time for Hokuto's Pondering Proctors, a review of Hokuto and Kamiyama's Pondering Putana podcast within a podcast within a podcast. S.
That's correct. Putan 3. Oh, S? Yeah. Damn. Wow. That's so impressive. I didn't think it was going to get an S. I was like, maybe I didn't really do it this week. I'm happy.
Yeah.
You're happy? Clearly, I'm happy. So.
Yeah. I mean, it helps that Autumn's no longer here. Where can we find you?
You can find me on Blue Sky at Polar Bear Summer online. I have so many fucking podcasts. Most of them are found at abnormalmapping.com. What's coming up? There's an Emerald Mapping coming out at the end of this week. Please listen to it. It's on Parasite Eve 2, which is a pretty good game. I'm kind of conflicted about some of it, but it's a pretty good game. We last week put out your uncle's beach house on Legend of the Overfiend. You were there. My friend Dia was there. Our friend Ina was there. It was great. I don't know why Dia is my friend, but Ina is our friend.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm friends with Dia. We tried to do an episode of this podcast without you, and then you had to come back and be like, put me in, chief.
I feel like that was a Freudian slip that someone's going to give me shit for.
It's you, me.
And Dia, maybe. Dia listens to this, I think. We talked about that. It ended up being really good. I'm really happy with it. It comes out tomorrow as of a recording, but like it's already out. Watch me and Dia play the Blueprints on Dia's YouTube channel, youtube.com/@DiaLucina. That's been really fun. People seem to really like it. It's doing incredible numbers for her channel because the depressing fact is no one gives a shit about old games, but people love when you play something new.
Yeah. Started playing that with my kid.
And then on the Export Audio Network, I know this is kind of earplugs, but I'm going to step on it anyway. Tubi will probably have its second episode out already. If it gets edited promptly, because that's going to be like a Sunday Monday joint, right?
I think. Yeah,
yeah. And that records on Saturday. That'll be out on the first episode of Ruby, episode two of Tubi.
I won't be there.
You will not be there. Yeah. You're out of town. Right now, we're scheduled to have Molly come through, so we'll still have a 6-person bench. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah,
yeah. I suspect we're not going to have just 4-person podcast very often. I think we're going to be pretty full a lot of the time.
Yeah,
I hope that's my hope. I love a rowdy pod, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Is it me?
Yeah, it's you.
I was going to do a quick update for people that they did an echo Doppler imaging of my heart, and they're like, "Your heart looks good. You just have weird fucking wiring in it." You know, when they built your heart, they built it weird. They need to hire a better electrician is basically my situation. And they're like, you can start Adderall again. So that's been good. But anyway, you can go to foxomnia.xbra.io on Blue Sky, aka Bisky, and I have links to all of my podcasts there. Go listen to Ornate Stairwells. Enjoy that Neighboring Sounds episode that came out. Because there's not going to be another Stairwells for a while because I'm fucking busy all my weekends. Tragically. Yeah. Go listen.
I will say, briefly, in the realm of saying no to things, Autumn did try to get me to do something while you're away, and I was like, fuck no, I'm supposed to be saying no to stuff.
Yeah. Ghost Divers, go listen to that. We talked about it earlier. Go listen to Pondering Pluton so that you understand the segment where we talk about Pondering Pluton.
Oh, yeah, I don't understand how anyone doesn't listen to Pluton if you listen to this. Yeah. Please do that.
And that's all of them. Yeah. This is my fourth podcast.
Yeah.
But some days it's first in my heart.
Oh, I appreciate that. Whenever I could be first against Ghost Divers, one of the best podcasts, or my favorite podcast, I feel pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're killing me with your Ghost Divers schedule. I need to, like, not watch anime, and you're just not, you just keep watching too good of shows.
Yeah. I'm not going to announce my next pick, but you know it.
No. I know it. Yeah. Yeah, keep something in your back pocket. I'm just saying, get excited, because Ghost Divers basically is not going to be boring for the next year, at least. And I don't think I'm going to rewatch Turn A with you when you get to Turn A. And I think that's the only thing that's going to save me is not what I just I'm like, I don't think I have it in me to watch two Gundams at once. Whatever Gundam I'm watching, it's not going to be IBO yet, but some shit. The Origin or some stupid thing. I'm not going to watch that and Turn A. Origin's going to have a hard enough time.
Yeah. For the record, Penguin Drum's next, and then probably it's going to be Turn A.
Yeah.
I have another thing that will take the exact amount of time that it would take us to do Turn A, that will go in there so I don't have to mess with the schedule that I planned out. That was part of why I chose the thing that I chose. But my guess is Connor will be done with, he'll be all caught up and we'll be ready for Turn A in December.
A world where Connor's seen Gundam X is a world I want to live in. That's all I'm saying. What's he on right now?
Wing.
Wing still? Yeah. Okay. Is it just Wing X and that's it?
Yeah. I mean, Endless Waltz, but that's Wing.
Yeah, that's Wing. Okay.
I think he's just going to go straight into Endless Waltz instead of on GGP. I think he did X and then he went back to Endless Waltz.
Yeah, it was great because coming back to that really like revival. I mean, I don't know if I would have loved Endless Waltz as much as I did if we didn't do that.
Yeah.
I love him. Endless Waltz is so fucking dumb. I really love it though.
Yeah. Anyway, you're doing this to me too because it's going to be fucking Escaflowne next.
That's true.
I'm like, God damn it. You got to pick pick a show I don't want to watch as the backup. Go back to fucking Digimon or something.
I don't think I don't think we have one coming up anytime soon. The like big discussion that we're having, starting to have, and this, I guess, look, if you're like on the level, if you're like a homie, and you know, do I count? No. Your answer is no. Not to be rude. We're in discussion about what we should do for IBO. It's the only chance we have left for another 50 episode show, even though it's across two seasons, it's 50 episodes of anime. If we wanted to do a 50 episode backup, it's the last chance we have until we're done with Gundam. I'm not saying we want to do one. I'm saying if we did one, what would we do? Don't say Nana. It's already been discussed. We're not doing Nana.
But it is what I said.
It is what you said, yes. If you want to give me something else, it's something like we're going to do, maybe could do, go right ahead, but I don't think you got anything for GGP.
Yeah. I mean, I could think of something else, but...
Oh, the other thing I just will flatly say no to is Gaogaigar. I want to do Gaogaigar, but I want to do it after Gundam where we can do it faster than two episodes a week because I don't want to cover a super robot show two episodes a week again. It's kind of exhausting. I just don't think the shows support it that well.
Yeah. Well, that's nice for me because if you did Gaogaigar, I'd want to rewatch it.
I've never seen it, but I do really want to watch it. It seems sick as hell.
Yeah.
Anyway, oh, also don't recommend a Tomino show. Just don't. We're not going to watch any more Tomino shows other than G-Reco for GGP, like flatly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's it. If you have something, feel free to pitch it. If you're like, I don't know if I'm qualified to pitch this, then don't worry about it. We'll have covered everything that could possibly be covered by the time we make that decision. It's a ways out. That's like middle of next year or something. We got plenty of time to think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's it. We'll be back next week. We're going to read more of the Vita Nova. It's going to be great. We'll talk about more some bullshit. That'll be great. Until then, we are out of the podcast.
And we are out of the podcast.
Selling me, 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 sel mission.